case, I'm sorry.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Deputy Public Defender Karen Nakasone on behalf for Defendant Appellant Jason Lakeman. Your Honors, I would like to reserve 5 minutes for rebuttal. Your Honors, this case concerns two questions. Number one, whether jury instruction number 27 containing the 703-304 defense of others, whether that instruction should have been properly given at all. And secondly, even if this court finds that the instruction was properly given, that the instructions as a whole were still misleading and inaccurate, especially in light of how the prosecution used instruction number 27 to undercut the defendant's self-defense in closing argument. Regarding the first point, that instruction number 27 was improperly given, instruction number 27, the defense of others, is a defense for defendants pursuant to 703-301. So that was the first reason why it should not have been given at all. And secondly, once it was given, it created the effect of substituting what should be defendant's subjective view of the circumstances under a self-defense application. It substituted his perspective with complainant Katadoris' perspective, and that's a misapplication of the self-defense. Now, regarding point one, that instruction number 27, the defense...
So Ms. Nakasone,
yes.
It's your position that instruction number 27 should not have been given, period?
Yes, and we argue...
For various reasons, but
yes.
Should not have been given, period?
Yes, that's what we raised, and we also raised an alternative argument. In the view that the court may still find, as the ICA did, that the instruction was properly given. And if that's the case, our position...
What would be the rationale explaining how instruction number 27 could be properly given?
Well, we don't agree that it was given, but just looking at...
Your position is... You know, if you guys want to be deranged and view the instruction properly given, there was still error. But your position is, under no circumstances should instruction number 27 have been given.
Yes, that is our position that we raised in the opening. That's the position raised by trial counsel during settlement. And to support that position, HRS 703-301 contains the general language outlining how it contains a general language for justification defenses. And that 301 states, sub 1, in any prosecution for an offense, justification as defined in 703-302 through 703-309 is a defense. So it limits the applicability of defense of others and any justification defenses to something that is a prosecution for an offense. So it's plain, it's clear, and unambiguous. 703-301 says you only get the justification defense in a prosecution for an offense. So you can't allow the justification defense to be given to people who are not being prosecuted, i.e., complaining categories.
Just the concept, when you look at the instruction, it refers to actor, right?
Yes.
The word actor is included in there, and actor is in reference, it's referencing the defendant.
Right.
Okay, so you say it's not applicable in this case. But the concept of protecting the victim, trying to protect another, a third party, does that have any bearing on the circumstances that the defendant should take into account as he claims his defenses or the defense of
self-defense? That
Is that what the ICA was trying to say?
I think the ICA was trying to say what the trial court ultimately found, that because of the peculiar factual circumstances, you know, the evidence seems to strongly suggest that Catadores was acting in defense of his friend who was laying on the ground. I mean, however, maybe his belief was mistaken, but the court, and I believe the ICA, also felt that the lawful force instruction of defense of others was needed to assist the jury to figure out how to determine unlawful force within instruction number 26.
Well, along those lines, and focusing on instruction number 26, the self-defense instruction, broadly speaking, that instruction advised the jury that the defendant could permissibly employ force against the unlawful use of force by another person. And unlawful force was defined as unjustifiable use of force. Well, given the peculiar circumstances of this case, how was the jury, without more, to know what constituted unjustifiable use of force?
Okay. Well, that is the position that ICA takes, and
that's my question.
You know, if the court goes that way, and that is one of the arguments raised in our application, that if you still find that instruction was necessary to assist the jury in that way, it wasn't enough just to give that. The court still needed to give supplemental instruction to ensure that the self-defense wouldn't be misapplied, because the prosecution argued here to the jury very clearly that this is how you evaluate the self-defense. They just zoomed in on the term unlawful force. They used instruction number 27, the defense of others. Say you use this instruction over here, which is all about Catadores, to help you interpret what is unlawful force. So if you find that the force is lawful, not unlawful, then there's no self-defense. So the jury either misapplied the self-defense or they didn't even apply it at all. I mean, that's the grave risk that we believe happened here. For the ICA to say that instruction number 26, the self-defense, you have to assume that the jury properly applied it, we submit that turns a willful blind eye to the very real possibility that the self-defense was either improperly or not even applied at all.
How does instruction number 27 undo, or in what way is it inconsistent with the statement in instruction number 26 that the reasonableness of the defendant's belief that the use of protective force was immediately necessary shall be determined from the viewpoint of a reasonable person in the defendant's position under the circumstances of which the defendant was aware or as the defendant reasonably believed them to be? Is that negated by instruction 27?
No, it's not, but the problem is the unlawful force within instruction number 26 is sort of stuck on the bottom there. And that there's nothing in instruction number 26 that appears to clearly tell the jury, in the face of having instruction like number 27 go in together with self-defense, there's nothing telling the jury within 26 clearly telling them that unlawful force is to be determined from the viewpoint of the defendant and not Catadores.
Paragraph 3 of instruction 26 tell them that? What I just read?
Okay. Paragraph 3 tells a jury how to apply the self-defense, but it doesn't specifically contain the unlawful force component within it.
It does. Yes, it does. Paragraph 3 expressly.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm looking at paragraph 4. Sorry. Okay. Under the circumstances. Okay. So is the court's question then that is sufficient? Are you asking me if that's sufficient?
Whether instruction number 27 in any way undercuts that language?
The way instruction number 27 had the effect of undercutting that language in the way that the prosecution told the jury how to apply the two instructions together. So,
well, it's one thing to argue that the prosecution misargued the instructions. It's another thing to argue that there is inconsistency between instruction 26 and 27 on their face. And I'm asking where the inconsistency is on their face.
Well, in light of having instruction number 27 go in with instruction number 26, the jury is not clearly told that finding the defense of others does not automatically negate the self-defense. And when you put the instructions together, if you juxtapose them side by side, which is how the jury was given it, without additional supplemental instruction telling them that even if you find that instruction defense of others applies, it doesn't mean that self-defense automatically does not apply. They needed to be told that the defenses, even if they do go in together, you could have both defenses going at the same time, meaning you could find, jury, that defense of others applied, but you still need to consider the self-defense, and that could...
Defense of others. My understanding is the same as yours as to why instruction number 27 was given. My understanding is that it was given in order to explain what use of force was lawful and what use of force was unlawful in the context of defending someone else. But without some explanation as to what constitutes the lawful use of force in defense of others, how can the jury understand or what constitutes the lawful use or unlawful use of force under the circumstances of your case?
Okay. Well, I think that this is mentioned in our brief. It's not specifically argued. We do cite to the Model Penal Code's explanation of how to evaluate unlawful force. And the Model Penal Code and our instruction number 26, that third paragraph and the second paragraph, the formulation of the language of our self-defense is almost verbatim to how the Model Penal Code sets up the self-defense in 3.04 subsection 1. And the code then discusses within the context of its self-defense formulation, it says on subsection D, and this is on page 40 of the Model Penal Code, it says, and it's cited in our opening brief as well as in our application, that regarding unlawful force, the code says several points should be noted about the use of the word unlawful in subsection 1. There is no requirement that the force against which the actor defends himself be unlawful. It is enough that he believes it to be so. So what's lacking in instruction number 26 is adequate sort of confining or directing the jury.
Did you propose instruction 26? Did the defense propose it? Was it a court's instruction?
I think the defense did propose it, and I believe it was modified, but I'm not sure
by
exactly.
By agreement of the parties?
I think so.
All right. Well, the last paragraph of instruction 26 defines unlawful force, does it not?
Yes, it does.
And it defines unlawful force in part as the unjustifiable use of force, right?
Yes.
But unjustifiable use of force is nowhere defined in Instruction 26. Isn't that so?
Yes.
So how is the jury to know what constitutes an unjustifiable use of force?
Again, if this court feels that it was still necessary to give instruction number 27 to help the jury figure that out, you know, there still has to be supplemental instruction, and I would say that what's in the model penal code, you know, it could, the unlawful force definition right there doesn't tell the jury, it still doesn't tell the jury that you're supposed to evaluate unlawful force, whether the force is lawful or unlawful, from the defendant's point of view. So a code...
But the buck stops ultimately with the trial court in terms of instructing the jury properly. But did the defense propose any supplemental instruction that would constitute an antidote to your perceived deficiencies in Instruction 27?
No. But the defense did oppose the giving of Instruction number 27.
So the defense wanted Instruction 26 given in a vacuum with respect to the meaning of unjustifiable use of force.
Well, that they wanted instruction, they didn't want instruction number 27 to be given, and the specific objection.
So the defense offered nothing that would have defined unjustifiable use of force.
We didn't submit anything, no. But, like the court just said, it is the court's duty to properly instruct. And having objected to the defense of others coming in, and it was misused in the way that defense counsel did fear that it would turn into a trial about Katadoris and whether Katadoris was entitled to use defense of others. And so the defense counsel tried in closing argument to defeat the defense of others. And
didn't it come down in part to whether the defendant could reasonably have believed that Katadoris was not justified in his use of force? I rather suspect the defense argued that.
Yeah, she argued that defense of others didn't apply to Katadoris, that the facts showed that it didn't apply. But it still didn't protect the jury from applying the defenses in an either-or manner, meaning if they find lawful force under number 27, there is no self-defense. And that's a grave misapplication of self-defense, and it was grave error for the
jury have had. In order to have reached a result via that route, wouldn't it have had to ignore that part of instruction number 26 directing the jury to consider the reasonableness of the defendant's belief from both an objective and subjective standpoint?
Okay. The problem is the unlawful force definition is at the bottom, and it doesn't, it's not included in that subjective-objective formulation. And so because it's stuck on the bottom there,
it's stuck on the bottom, but paragraph 3 raises the dichotomy or highlights the dichotomy between lawful and unlawful use of force, does it not? And so you have to define lawful use of force somewhere, and the instruction happens to do it at the end.
Okay.
But it's certainly signposted or telegraphed by the language in paragraph 3, isn't it?
Well, I respectfully, Your Honor, I disagree, because that paragraph 3 doesn't say anything about unlawful force. And
I'm looking at it. The use of force is justified when a person reasonably believes that such force is immediately necessary to protect himself on the present occasion against the unlawful use of force by the other person. but it doesn't define unlawful use of force. So that definition comes at the end of the instruction.
Okay.
But it's raised in the third paragraph.
It is raised in the third paragraph, and it's defined at the end, and it would have been a clear and a correct statement of the law to add supplemental language like what the Model Penal Code suggests.
Well, suppose the last paragraph defining unlawful use of force, unlawful force, had been inserted as a parenthetical immediately after the phrase unlawful use of force in paragraph 3. Would that satisfy you?
I think that would be better, because then it would be more clear that the language that immediately follows that subjective objective analysis does apply. It extends to the term unlawful force as well.
703-300 defines unlawful force, doesn't it?
Yes.
And it encompasses the proposition that unlawful force is that which constitutes an offense, doesn't it?
Yes.
So that may be a definition that might be employed rather than something ambiguous such as unjustifiable use of force.
Yes.
It seems circular.
Okay.
But you proposed instruction 26.
Yes. But, you know, looking at, and that's what's nice about having oral argument, things become more clear. I talk about the Model Penal Code in my application. And in looking at the Model Penal Code explanation of unlawful force, and in looking repeatedly at instruction number 26, we're saying that the Model Penal Code explanation of unlawful force, if we just add it in next to this application of unlawful definition of unlawful force, if we add it in the language, there is no requirement that the force against which the defendant defends himself be unlawful. It is enough that the defendant reasonably believes it to be so. That's out of the Model Penal Code. Having that additional language.
Are you taking the position now that your proposed instruction, which became instruction 26, is erroneous?
The instructions, you know, in light of how it was misused and looking, you know, at the appellate record and all the briefings, and we didn't specifically say instruction number 26 was wrong, but I do talk about the Model Penal Code definition. Having this supplemental definition would really make instruction number 26 clear, and it would clearly tell the jury.
So your present argument is that your proposed instruction was erroneous.
Your Honor, I'm going based off of my recollection that instruction number 26 was ours, but I'm not entirely sure. I believe we submitted it because, you know, we raised the defense. It would make sense for us to submit it. I don't know what exactly the modifications were, and I believe we agreed. It did track logic.
That a complainant can be said to have employed lawful force even if the complainant is mistaken as to whether or not the use, reasonably mistaken as to whether the use of force was necessary under the circumstances. Are you applying the same standard to a complainant that the code gives to the defendant?
You know, I guess it would be if that's the standard we're going to use, but here's the other.
What about the definition of unlawful force, which says that it constitutes an offense? So if you applied that to the complainant, wouldn't that make more sense?
The unlawful force definition?
Yes.
The employment of which constitutes an offense.
In other words, the complainant wasn't engaged in any conduct that constituted an offense.
I think so.
That would remove the idea of reasonably believed from the conduct of the complainant.
I think so. I'm not exactly following what the
putting
court.
Putting it another way, if I understand Justice Acuda's question correctly, had unlawful force been defined in Instruction 26 as Justice Acuda is suggesting, tracking the language of the Model Penal Code, that might have obviated the need for Instruction 27. Isn't
yes.
that so?
Yes.
But you didn't propose the language contained in the Model Penal Code.
No, but I do talk about it in the application. And
Was the trial court required to incorporate the language of the Model Penal Code as distinguished from the Hawaii Penal Code?
Well, this court has stated that the trial court has a duty to properly instruct the jury. And, you know, this, I don't think this issue specifically has been litigated, but now that we are litigating, we're saying that it is adding the additional language for the Model Penal Code would be more accurate and it would be a correct statement of law to protect the kind of either-or analysis.
Are you arguing that it was error for the trial court to define unlawful force as it's defined in Instruction 26?
Given what happened here and the misuse and confusion that resulted from defense of others, yes. And I believe I'm... How much time do I have?
Just clarify when you come back on rebuttal whether or not what I read to you is from the Hawaii Penal Code.
Okay.
And 703-300.
703-300.
Unlawful force.
Okay. Thank you.
May it please the court. Counsel, good morning. Richard Minatoya, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney, County of Maui, for Plaintiff Appellee, State of Hawaii. In response to some of the arguments raised by the appellant, you know, looking at this case, it's like a double negative. You look at the first negative and how it applies to the second negative. In this case, it's the use of force that Mr. Caradoris used and how that applied to the use of force subsequently used by the appellant. Now, the lawfulness of that force, agreeably, is not the sole consideration, but it is a consideration that the jury has to make, whether or not that force was lawful or unlawful, and then how it applies to the subsequent subjective belief of the defendant. Now, in this case, the facts clearly show what happened, you know, that the appellant was the instigator. He hit the first person, Mr. Gordon, then starts to chase him. Guy falls down, stands over his head, and his friend is there, Mr. Caradoris, with no other perception that this guy's going to continue his attack on Mr. Gordon. Now, how does that apply to the instructions given? Well, the facts are clear that, you know, the perception is there. The jury has to consider whether or not Mr. Caradoris' actions were lawful or not. Clearly, given the facts, they were. Now, you apply that to now the subsequent use of force by Lachman, the appellant, on Mr. Caradoris. He's the one that's causing the problem. He's the one that's given the perception that an actual unlawful use of force is taking place and has to resort or feels that he has to resort to use force to protect himself.
Mr. Minatoya, going to what I think is the bottom line of the appellant's argument, how do you respond to the position that Instruction 27 erroneously directs the jury's attention or requires the jury to consider the reasonableness of the complainant's belief in lieu of the reasonableness of the defendant's belief?
I think that's a misdirection. The thing is, you know, the jury was given all of the instructions, including 23 and 26, in addition to instruction number 27. Taking the instructions as a whole, you know, that situation was addressed. The question or the issue addressed by instruction number 27 basically is a modifier or another consideration that would be part of the determination the jury needs to do pursuant to instruction number 26.
In other words, the jury in assessing the justifiability of the complainant's use of force has to consider the reasonableness of the plaintiff of the complainant's belief of the necessity.
That's correct.
But when factoring that in to the defendant's self-defense, the jury is still required to consider the reasonableness of the defendant's belief.
That's correct, and that's set forth in instruction number 26. So basically what the jury has been instructed is, if you look at the defendant's claim of self-defense, you need to consider A, B, C, D, etc. And then when you consider item D, you must consider, you know, 1, 2, 3. Basically, it's, you know, you consider all of these factors, the defendant's subjective belief, etc., etc. One of them is the unlawful use of force. When you consider unlawful use of force in instruction 27, then you also consider these other factors. And basically,
the defense of others instruction simply didn't apply in this case.
As far as the defendant was concerned?
Well, that's the only way defense of others arises in the model penal code, isn't it?
Well, I think the consideration
speaks of actor, is it speaking of the complainant?
That's correct, and the
so
record shows
it only applies to
that's
defendants.
Correct. That the reason why they changed it from defendant to actor was because it applied. It was intended to apply to Caradores, not to Mr. Lachman.
Okay. So the only way defense of others arises in a criminal case under the Hawaii Penal Code is if it's a defense by the defendant.
That's correct.
Yet this court gave a defense of others instruction, even though it didn't pertain to the facts. It wasn't raised as a defense. The defendant raised self-defense.
That's correct, except that's why instruction number 27 was modified. Everything else says the defendant, etc., etc. Instruction number 27 was modified to say the actor, and the term defendant was taken out. And basically that's to explain the unlawful use of force or unjustifiable use of force concept in instruction number 26.
Although the concept is one that applies to defendants, not complainants.
Well, you know, the determination of whether that force used against him was justifiable / unlawful.
Well, you can take a definition of unlawful force and use that as an instruction without getting into all of the elements of a defense of others, couldn't you? Because that's all you're interested in, whether force was lawful or unlawful.
That's correct.
Okay.
And our position is that this instruction, number 27, as modified, was the means used to make that explanation.
But in final argument, you went the whole 9 yards. You just took the defense of others and substituted Caradores for the defendant in the argument to the jury.
Unfortunately, that's the case. Okay. However,
I mean, it happened, right?
It did happen. Well, we don't contest the fact that it had happened.
Okay. And was that correct?
Legal obviously, correct. It's not correct. The phrasing, but that's not evidence. The court instructed that the sole consideration is whether or not the force was unlawful. I think that's part of the consideration the jury has to do instruction as given by instruction number 26, whether or not the force was unlawful or unjustified.
facts indicate and show that this was, on the part of Canadores, he was protecting Guron. Is that right?
That's correct.
Okay. And the factual situation indicated that. Guron and Canadores were friends. They were roommates. They were there that night, and the defendant struck Guron, started chasing him, and Canadores was trying to
terminate that situation. That's correct.
And so this was, in essence, a third-party defense. I mean, a person, that's a victim trying to defend the third party.
That's correct.
Okay,
that's correct.
This is something that, I guess, as part of the objective test, that the defendant had to consider the totality of these circumstances, and if he found, I mean, if a reasonable man found that, knowing all of the facts, that this was, in fact, a protection of a third party, then that's lawful.
That's correct. And we would go even further. That's the defendant's subjective belief of a reasonable person should also take that into consideration, that he created the situation, he continued the pursuit.
So the adoption of 27 was somewhat coincidental because it fits the facts of this case.
That's correct. It helps explain number 26. That's correct.
You're saying even if Caradorison was mistaken about his use of force, that would still be lawful force?
I think it'll depend on the facts of the situation.
Assuming I gave you the facts, assuming he was mistaken about the need to use force, then that would be considered lawful force by a complainant?
That our position, to be consistent with our position in this case, is a question for the trier of fact to determine, which is why the instruction was given in this case.
So you would instruct then that the complainant can be mistaken in his use of force, and that would be considered lawful force, which would undercut or rebut self-defense defense.
That's correct, because that mistake of fact, or that mistake situation also applies to the defendant.
And the defendant's
use of force.
If the defendant reasonably believed but was mistaken about his use of force, then who wins?
That is a question for the trier of fact to determine whether or not, given the circumstances, given the subjective and objective test set forth by instruction number 26.
Force, but both are mistaken. What happens to the defense of self-defense?
Again, that's the province of the trier of fact.
How is the trier of fact to decide then, if the same standard applies to both the complainant and the defendant?
Well, given the situation where you say both parties are mistaken, I mean,
wouldn't it ultimately come down to the reasonableness of Lackman's belief?
Well, it will come down, basically, yes, the jury would have to determine, basically, subjectively and objectively as set forth by Rule 26, whether or not that use of force in perceived self-defense applies.
Didn't the prosecution and final argument just take the defense of others' defense and went down that the indicia of defense of others in final argument?
Looking at what was cited to the prosecutor, prosecutor says there's no self-defense in this case because the force that Mr. Lackman used was not being used to protect himself against lawful force. The force he used was being used to protect himself against lawful force. That is Mr. Caradoris' defense of Wesley Godin. you know, basically that is still part of the consideration that the jury must look at. Given instruction number 26, the analysis on self-defense doesn't stop there. And the jury has had the opportunity to consider and was instructed to consider more than just the issue of whether or not Mr. Caradores' use of force in and of itself was lawful or unlawful.
Well, I won't read the whole thing. An opening brief at 13 to 14, he just goes down the indicia for the defense of third parties. He's not limiting himself to a definition of unlawful force.
That's correct, and that's merely argument on the part of the prosecutor, because the jury was instructed by instructions number 23 and number 26 about what considerations the jury had to look at to make the determination of whether or not self-defense applied or did not apply. Basically, the whole argument, the argument raised on the issue of self-defense, you know, taking the argument that they raised that this issue of whether or not Mr. Caradores used lawful force or not is not being part of the consideration of the trier of fact, it doesn't make sense. They need to look at whether or not the use of force against the defendant was lawful or not as part of their consideration of whether or not the defendant's use of force was lawful or not. And that's the bottom line. And instruction number 27 gave them the information they needed to make that determination, or part of that determination, on the use of force by Mr. Caradores, and thereby also giving them the information needed to make the determination under instruction number 26. Based on that, and based on the facts of this case and the evidence received, it's the state's position that the conviction should be affirmed. And if there are no other questions, that's all I have.
I assume you have no argument with Justice Hakoba's suggestion that if within the four corners of instruction number 26, the definition of unlawful force had not begged the definition of unjustifiable use of force, there would have been no need for instruction 27.
That's probably true.
But
obviously, you know.
Was instruction 26 proposed by the defense?
I can't recall. It might have been one of those standard instructions that was subsequently modified by the court. You know, the problem is whether or not at that point, what is justification? That becomes a question. What is the justification for Mr. Caradores' actions? Whether that was justified or not. I mean, that issue still needed to be addressed.
You know, this can have the consequence of turning the trial upside down, you know, because then the question is, who's on trial, right?
That's correct.
If you're going to apply the same standard to the complainant and to the defendant, then I don't know. I think that just is going to confuse the jury.
Except, however, though, the law of justification is set by 703, chapter 703. I mean, what else is there to instruct the jury on what the law is, on whether or not an action is justified or not?
You're going to have to prove as a prosecution maybe then that the complainant didn't commit any offense. If the definition of unlawful force is committing an offense, then what's your burden as prosecution?
Well, along those lines, just as Justice Okobi, you pointed out under 703-300, on the definition of unlawful force and the reference to committing an offense. I mean, basically, you know, in this case, we would say that it was proven. Caradores is trying to tackle the defendant.
Was
correct.
Caradores
which
committing any offense?
Which potentially could be, but for the fact that
so
the argument
under your approach and the ICA's approach, are you going to have to disprove that?
That may be the possibility. The fact is, the facts of this case turn on the question of whether or not the use of force by Mr. Caradores was justified or not. We would need to show that was proper as part of the jury's consideration for whether or not Mr. Lachman's use of force was proper or not.
What does this mean when you say the model penal code upon which 702.304 is based, quote, there is no requirement that the force against which the actor defends himself be unlawful? I mean, how does that mean?
Well,
it further says that in most instances, the critical factor still remains whether an actor's conduct is justified. Is an actor's state of mind or belief respecting the facts and circumstances. So even if it's unlawful or lawful, it comes down to the reasonable belief of the actor. Even if it's lawful, if he thinks that it's unlawful, then it's okay to protect himself. That's justifiable, right? I mean, even if he believes it's lawful, isn't that what the model penal code is saying? That it's the reasonable belief of the actor, even if the defendant, if the actor who is his victim is coming after him, if it's lawful, doesn't really matter.
Well, which is what we cited in our answering brief on pages 23, 24 about the mistake of fact. It does not apply at that point. That the mistake of fact would not justify the mistake of whether or not the force used against that person was lawful or unlawful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Your Honors, I have 3 minutes, so I'll try to hit some of the points that were raised. The 703-300 definition of unlawful force, I think when I was writing this and I was combing through the model penal code, it didn't appear to have come out of the code. And I'm looking at HRS 703-300. I read the commentary, and it's not, the legislature drafted it, but it's not clear what it's based on. And I'm sorry, I didn't go through the legislative history to find out where exactly this unlawful force definition came from. But, you know, given the factual circumstances here and how there was a strong potential that the self-defense in particular, was misapplied, the unlawful force definition in 26 requires further clarification to the jury that unlawful force must be determined from the viewpoint of the defendant and not by the jury or not by Caradores or someone else. And what happens is, you know, the concern was raised that we would create more litigation and more confusion. I think that's a very real implication. If this court allows this instruction to stand, then and be applied and find no error with the way it was misused by the prosecution, then in every self-defense case, a defense counsel is going to affect our trial strategy and preparation from opening to the cross-examination to the direct all the way to closing. We're going to be fighting battles on two fronts. We're going to be making sure we show enough to establish our self-defense, and we have to make sure we defeat the complainant's, whatever defense the complainant is going to try to use to defeat our self-defense. So it will affect trial practice. It will affect... It will create more...
I repeat that it seems to me that you're simply ignoring the third paragraph, which states that the use of force is justified when the person, in this case the defendant, reasonably believes that such force is immediately necessary to protect himself against the unlawful use of force by the other person. The reasonableness of the defendant's belief is determined from his viewpoint, or the viewpoint of a reasonable person in his position. Okay. I mean, so where is the confusion?
The unlawful force, that term is not in that reasonable belief formulation where they say you have to look at all the circumstances. And given by itself, you know, it probably would have been properly applied.
It appears before and immediately before and immediately after the phrase unlawful use of force in paragraph 3.
Okay. I see what the court's position is, but there was still, you know, the instruction, maybe if you take out unlawful force, that unlawful force definition on the bottom, and you leave the paragraph 2 and paragraph 3, and I believe it's paragraph 4, then you don't take out, I think it would be a proper application where how you determine unlawful force, you would apply that subjective-objective analysis, because there's nothing telling you otherwise, that you would assume that you apply that test. And that would be a correct application of self-defense.
But the jury has to be instructed as to what makes force unlawful, doesn't it?
Yes, and to protect against the kind of either-or application of the defenses, if you find complainant's force was justified, then there is no self-defense. There needed to be clarification that unlawful force must be determined from the defendant's perspective. Given what happened in this case,
it refills what paragraph 3 says.
That is what paragraph 3 says, but when you have 27, like we had in this case, you have another defense going on for somebody else, that's what created the confusion here. And that's why if you uphold number 27 being given, there still needs to be clarification to make sure they do apply it the way paragraph 2, 3, and 4 say. And I'd just like to just touch upon the facts before I run out of time. There was some question that, you know, the evidence seems to suggest that complainant Catadores believed that he was acting in defense of Godin. But when you look at the evidence, the undisputed evidence shows that Mr. Lakeman had his back to complainant Catadores. Catadores had 10 beers. Granted, defendant had some, but Catadores had 10 beers. He could have overestimated or jumped to conclusions as to what was going on. Defendant is standing over Mr. Godin for approximately 2 to 5 seconds. That's the facts that come out in the record, doing nothing. He is standing there over him, looking at him. And then the prosecutor argued that Catadores then said, "Stay away from my friend." But if you comb the evidence, there's no words to that effect. The only words that you hear come out in testimony are that Catadores said, "F you, you mess with my friend. You mess with my friend." Or those were it's more vague as to what Catadores was saying. The speech that Catadores used as he's running up do not clearly convey that he was acting in defense of his friend. So, you know, that's a jury question, too. From 5 to 10 feet away, Mr. Lakeman, as he's standing there, his back turns because he hears the guy yelling, and from 5 to 10 feet away, that's how much notice he has. 5 to 10 feet away, the guy is running, barreling full tilt, running full speed at him, about to tackle him on a cement concrete surface. So in order to prevent himself from being knocked to the ground, he punches him one time. And then Mr. Lakeman then goes and back to a taco stand and serves his remaining customers. So we submit that the evidence in this case shows that even in the light most favorable to the state, there was a proper exercise of self-defense, and Mr. Lakeman was justified in exercising his limited force of one punch to deflect the onslaught and being taken down by Mr. Catadores. Yes.
The factual situation as testified to by the victims both Godon and Catadores indicate that defendant was after Godon.
Yes.
Right, at the time that the charge was made by Catadores. And so if the jury believes them, as opposed to the other lay witnesses supposedly that didn't see any kind of aggressiveness, I mean, one witness said that the defendant was walking away back to the taco stand mm-hmm. when the charge occurred. The other two witnesses or three witnesses didn't indicate any chasing of Godon at the time that Catadores attacked him. So, I mean, if you just believe the victim, if the jurors believe the victims, I mean, there's two sides to it. And Lackman, I don't know, I'm not clear about Lackman's specific testimony, but he also indicated that he wasn't actually attacking Godon when Catadores attacked him, right?
That you mean the defendant indicated that?
Yeah, Lackman indicated that.
Right.
I mean,
he said he was just standing over him.
Right.
And defense says, I could have done anything, but I didn't.
So the jury merely bought the testimony of the victims. Is that how it comes out?
It could. But Catadores, the only testimony on the state side is Catadores says that defendant noticed I was coming towards him at a pretty rapid rate, and I'm not sure what his instinct was, but I woke up with two broken bones and a broken nose. And Catadores does say that his intention was to stop everything. But when you look at the, you know, and you got to consider the fact that Catadores is a very intoxicated 21-year-old who's relating his observation from his point of view. But the other defense, we would submit neutral eyewitnesses, they all actually do confirm that Catadores is charging at Lakeman. One of them used the word barreling into him. He swung once and connected. The second one, Mr. Davis, he says, charges at him like he's going to tackle or hit him. And the third witness, the young girl, she says, he charged at Jason like he was going to tackle him almost. So the three neutral observers who saw the encounter, we submit, their testimony supports a proper exercise of self-defense. And we would ask this court for a reversal.
Let me ask one more question.
Yes.
Why didn't you appeal the conviction on Godon? I mean, your client's conviction of assaulting Godon.
Well, as appellate counsel, I make a thorough review of the record. And
the testimony that I saw was Rosh, who said that Godon lifted his hand at your client, and your client from within the taco stand struck him, right?
Yes, that's what Rash says.
Was that the incident?
That's the incident against Godon.
Yeah.
So he was
convicted of assault on Godon.
Assault third against Godon.
It was a self-defense that he could have raised.
I think they did try that, and then there's other testimony that says when they come outside that there's another scuffle and the defendant hits him two times. So there's lots of evidence supporting the state for that count. So
anything else?
No.
If not,
thank you,
very
Your Honor.
Much. Take this matter under advisement.